Welcome to the Africa Tech Summit podcast, sharing insights from across the African tech scene. Today's episode is kindly supported by Raynest and was recorded live at Africa Tech Summit London. Stay tuned for great insights and a discount code to join us at Africa Tech Summit Nairobi, powered by Raynest.
Right, thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me. If you could just do a 30-second, very quick intro, please. And just as a heads up, this is like very much a founder-led panel. We're here to share our war stories, our battle stories, and hopefully give actually just really interesting, punchy advice. Safe space, we can share our challenges and also maybe celebrate some of our successes as well. But we have all been working at the front line for quite a long time. And I'm hoping that there'll be some questions at the end as well. And you should see this panel as a resource if you have any difficult questions. We're here to answer them as well. So Mike, let's start with you, please. Introductions.
Great. And hopefully Chatham's house rules so we can be totally honest and open. Yeah.
100%. Is there any other way?
Yeah. Thanks so much. Thank you all for staying. I know we have the last panel of the day. I ran around trying to search for coffee and I only found a coffee machine in the cafeteria that didn't work. So really appreciate everybody staying. My name's Mike. I'm a co-founder and CEO of a business called Boost, which is digitizing supply chains in Africa. We operate across six countries. We're a UK registered company, but we're in Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Kenya, Egypt, South Africa. We have two anchor partnerships with Unilever and MasterCard. So I appreciate you're on the Unilever Nigeria board, so we'll talk later, I'm sure. And before I co-founded and scaled one of the very first fintechs in Africa called Zona from 2009 to 19, which was a mobile money platform across Southern Africa.
Thank you very much. Chika?
Chika Nwobi. A lot of people call me CN by my initials. I'm founder and CEO of Decagon. Decagon is a vertically integrated tech talent business. So we take exceptional people and help them launch careers as software engineers, including providing them the financing and all the other types of support they need through that journey. And then we help companies to connect with exceptional talents, companies both in Africa, in Europe and America. I started this company 6 years ago. Before starting this company, I spent the decade before that doing early stage investing and venture building, help build through that phase. We was part of achieving four exits. And the decade before that, I founded and built a company that was called MTech that pioneered the mobile value added service industry in Nigeria and Africa.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
The last time I was on a panel like this with Uzoma was in front of the bankers committee Central Bank.
Okay.
And I was trying to get the bank CEOs to give loans to students. And Nigerian banks don't give, that's why fintech exists, because Nigerian banks don't give loan even to proper companies. And it happened from that panel. It was an amazing thing that happened. So I'm expecting some amazing stuff from being on this panel with
my older brother. No pressure there for any of us. And a seamless segue here to someone who used to be a bank CEO as well.
This is going to be a very interesting panel. So the last time I was sitting with him, I was the CEO of a bank called Diamond Bank. And we merged with Access Bank to, they bought our retail franchise. And so my name is Uzoma Jose. And so when I found myself jobless and realized that we had actually sold the platform that actually used to allow me to do my banking, I decided that, I better build my own bank so that I can actually do what I want to do. So the whole idea of Sparkle was to build a digital bank for the middle income, affluent and aspiring, and small businesses. Because one thing I know about banks is that we are very good at providing services to high net worth individuals, big corporates, and the masses. In between that, very lousy substandard services are on the bank. So I think Sparkle was an opportunity for us to provide, you know, premium banking services for the middle-income, affluent Nigeria, and which is the journey that we are actually on right now.
Thank you very much. And at some of the conversations today have talked about, oh, we need more exits. I'm the only one here who hasn't exited a company, so I'm moderately embarrassed. Chika, how many have you exited?
Five.
Okay, now you're just showing off. But I mean, the exits are there, and like, this panel is going to help us, I guess, talk about some of the challenges, but let's also share some advice as well about, you know, the exits as well, because I think that's going to be useful to a lot of people in the room. Speaking on that then, you know, a lot of people talk about there's not enough fundraising, or there's fundraising issues at the moment. Macroeconomic climate is particularly tough as well. How are you managing to continue to operate? You know, someone mentioned previously, you know, don't die in business as well. So maybe, like, this is a question to all the panel. Firstly, how is the macroeconomic climate sort of affecting you on the front line? And how is that affecting your kind of fundraising activities as well? Mike, let's start with you.
Yes, great question. It is challenging, to say the least. I've been an entrepreneur in Africa for 15 years now. It's always challenging. It's always cyclical. What we did at Boost, I think quite cleverly, this is my second business, was we designed our business model for that. Mm-hmm. And so we said, you know, we know what the things you can bank on: currency devaluations, macroeconomic hardship, political change. Mm-hmm. So you have to go in realizing, like, the times now are actually the normal times, right? And I saw when times are good and everybody's like, great, yeah, like, money's like falling from the sky. It's like anybody who's been around the block is just waiting for the down cycle that we're in now. That being said, it's like, it's very challenging because you've had like big currency shifts and huge devaluations. Like I have these calls with my team in Nigeria, Egypt, Kenya, they're all talking. Kenya's strengthened now, but like for a long time, it's like every currency's blowing up. South Africa, I can't even get a call with them because there's load shedding. Right? So there's just like constant instability. And then you have, we work with like, as I mentioned, the manufacturer with Unilever, but their challenges, right? There's inflation, they're struggling with the currency devaluation, there's consumer basket preferences, and then budgets are shrinking, so everybody's under cost pressure. And then you put that on, layer on like the VCs, and the environment changed a lot. Like I remember raising a seed round in 2009 and a Series A in 2012 before they were even counting statistics. We had, at my former company, we got a Series A term sheet, and my co-founders and I had to like look at Wikipedia and say like, what does Series A mean? Because it wasn't a thing, right? So now there's like these, a lot more like early stage and pre-seed and angels investors, which is great, and like there's some growth capital, but there's these huge gaps in the funding life cycle of a company, and funders are, and VCs often don't have money in their fundraising, and it's really challenging because it's already, you're working in Africa, when you're fundraising, you already need like way more traction for way less money in way more difficult conditions than anywhere else really in the world. And now that traction bar keeps rising and rising and rising. And I was joking like with somebody earlier that seed investors, I'm trying to get like a 500K ticket now. Like we've closed a 5-year agreement with MasterCard and like 4 contracts in 4 countries with Unilever. And now I've got investors, like seed investors, like, come back to us when you have a couple more manufacturers and global contracts. And like, do you want me to IPO first before I can get money from you?
Okay.
Right? And so luckily there's more angel investors. So companies are surviving by raising like smaller angel rounds. And that's been a saving grace for us in many ways. Institutional investors, very, very tough. And you get a lot of battle scars. So I think the founders that launch new companies are going to do better because you learn when you do it the first way around that you know cash is scarce. Like even when it's good, you got to treat it as scarce. And if you burn it quick, you're in big, big trouble.
Okay, thanks for that. So then Chika, then you have also worked in VC as well. So maybe help give us the your perspective in terms of raising money and building businesses and operations, but also maybe looking at giving it us some perspective from the VC perspective as well.
Yeah, for sure. So starting just from how we are coping operating now, we started this company when things were good. as far as both the demand for what we were building, meaning talent, there was excessive demand for talent, as well as funding and all that. But by default, I like to, partly because of having been on the investing side, and also just my training as a son of an Igbo businessman, I like to not raise a lot of capital and try to get profitable very early. So we didn't have a lot of cash when things started to get very tough. And what we've done is to be, is to simplify our business, because our business was very aggressive, very ambitious in terms of trying to solve all the problems in the value chain. So for example, to train people, we find smart people and we guarantee their loans, student loans, which means that we're responsible and involved in all the, we're like a bank, right? Like a lender. But we house them, we're housing them for 6 months, we're feeding them, so we're running a hotel, running a restaurant, as well as running a training business. And then, anyway, so we're stripping down a lot of the things that are more expensive to do, and just therefore we might not be able to serve as many people, but we will, if we can simplify our business, then we can stay alive, not just be alive, but be strong, because there's still a lot of opportunity. And I think that there is, I think it's very important to understand that if you look at, I've been doing business for like 20, been tech for like 25 years or so, that this is, right now is like among the best, like not among, it is, in terms of how easy it is to start something or grow something, it is the second easiest in that 25 years. We're taking 2 year windows. So this right after COVID to now, or right before COVID, this whole boom is the easiest. But other than that, this is the second easiest, because there's like I said, a lot more, there's, everybody knows what seed and pre-seed, and there's accelerator pro, there's a lot of support that wasn't there. But also there's a lot of talents that have been trained, have, you know, have gone to study for free at the school of startups that other people, you know, had raised money for. So there's a lot of capability. And adoption of tech has grown tremendously. So anyway, so therefore there's a lot of opportunity. There's still a lot of problems to solve. So operating effectively now, now is a great time. I think from a VC, if I look at it, if I was a full-time investor, first of all, I'll be suffering. I know that I'm suffering because the big LPs, we still don't have a lot of local LPs in Africa. So the big American and European LPs have, you know, taken flights to safety, right? So they're not investing in, or it's harder to get tickets, to get checks from them as a VC. And so then I'll be very, very reluctant to add companies to my portfolio, because I want to be able to back, I want to be able to support the companies I've already invested in. Because, and so that's just something to be mindful of. If you already have investors, even among their portfolio, they are choosing who they are going to help and who they are going to leave. Not kill, but who they're going to leave. And so you have to send them your updates, you have to be nice to them, you have to, right? Because that, I think, yeah. And I think related to that, being really humble about getting help now, I think, both from as an investor, as a as an operator, trying to get as much free help as possible through, whether that's through partnerships or through mentorships, or I know a founder, a very strong, successful founder, who is being very aggressive about recruiting through giving out equity to people who are very senior that can do, that can help him, because he's close to the finish line. And that's humility, because anyway, I'll stop there.
The same question to you, Uzoma, but please let's pick up on what Chika said about profitability, because a few years ago it was, you know, it was a dirty word almost. Everyone was just focused on fundraising, and now the tide has turned, and VCs just all of a sudden expected these startups to start working towards profitability. But I think maybe there is a crop of startup CEOs who don't really understand how to kind of pave a way to profitability. So same question to you in terms of the macroeconomic environment, but also how do you approach that whilst looking towards aggressive profitability?
I mean, I think on the macroeconomic problem in Nigeria, It's terrible. It's like, it's really, really bad. I mean, when I, and like, because I'm a bank, so like, it's about managing risk. And so I'm faced with FX risk, inflation risk right now. And so everything is going up except, and you can't push these things. So you cannot price in the risk into the services that you're providing to your customers. So you just have to wait it out. So it's only capital now that can save you. And that is like making sure that you understand what your risks are and how you can make that capital burn much slower while we go through this. It's an economic cycle. And so it's, Chika just said, it's about staying power. Now, I mean, like, so I come from banking. And I think one of the things that you learn about banking is structures, you know, very boring stuff like structures, governance, you know, risk management, and fear. And so, and predictability about numbers. And so, like, when I came into the entrepreneurial world, the new like digital world, and there's something that I couldn't understand because I'm working with, so my competition are players in the market that have a different set of metrics, right, that they're being rewarded on that are anti-banking. So that just don't make sense from a banking perspective. Things like, you know, how many, I mean, so like, I know that, so like, what are your transaction levels? So like, the more transactions you're doing or the millions of customers you have, that's great, we're gonna give you more money. I mean, I come from a space where, you know, it's how many customers, what are the quality of the customers? What type of transactions are they? Do they make sense? And then I think the biggest ones that I couldn't understand was, you know, that whole concept of knowing your customer and knowing what your customer is doing. So you would see millions of naira of transactions coming from one village in a place where the total GDP of that place was very, very small. And then, so your regulator is not looking at it and not understanding it because banking is very boring. I mean, there's interest and income, that's all, right? And then there's the affordability of your products and services. There's nothing, there's no magic. Technology just makes it easier, but it doesn't just, it's not an alchemy, there's no alchemy in there. And so the regulators not doing anything about it. Then we have VCs like Chika who are actually encouraging and fueling the fire. Because when you talk to them and you say, you know, like, you know, I'm going to grow over 5 years and we're going to do like, we're only doing about 200, 300 customers because we're very scared about, you know, understanding and knowing who our customers are. Then they say like, but what about your colleagues in the industry? I mean, you can't like start bad-mouthing people. And so, it just made fundraising challenging. First one, you know exactly where you're going to, you know exactly how you're going to get there. And so you don't have to start looking for, and I think fortunately for me, I think because I had been in banking for 30 years, so you have people that have seen what you have done and are willing to back you. So for then it was okay, that is a limited pool of funding, so you have to raise from there and plus from your own pool, but you have to use it judiciously. And so you're going to like focus on building the platform and not marketing, because marketing just burns your capital. You're going to like grow, you're going to really grow your customer base organically through your network, through your friends and families, and just hope that, you know, and so like just stay in there. And so that's exactly what the story is. We're just staying in there and we're growing, and then we're hoping for people to wake up and think, all right, these metrics don't make sense anymore. Let's start asking the questions about, okay, you're in financial services, so tell me about your risk framework. Tell me how you're going to manage risk, your risk in Nigerian risk over the next 2-3 years, and why. Tell me how, okay, instead of saying what's your Pan-African strategy is, like, if you're going to go Pan-African, how are you going to manage regulatory risk across these different countries with different languages and different policies? That's what we want to see. And once we start seeing that, I think, so I'm very confident, like Chika, that, you know, there's still going to be money for businesses, but there's going to be money for businesses that have actually thought about their business and the risk, they understand the risk that they're actually facing.
Okay, thank you very much. And then Jermaine, you're from Copia. It would be great to hear like some of your insights really about how the kind of macroeconomic climate is kind of helps over, you know, the helps Copia grow, but also some of the challenges that the company's faced as well.
I mean, from Copia's perspective, for those who know about us, you know, it's been a tough, I'd say, 2 years in the funding market. it's been very difficult to raise within our sector just because of the systemic problems that are going on. And I think it's one of those things where you need to build, to have the right business model, you need to build the business model with the right foundations. And I think the e-commerce sector, what has experienced over the last couple of years in Africa, there's been a lot of focus on top line growth and not enough focus on building the fundamentals. And as a result of that, you know, it's been one of those sectors which has struggled to attract a lot of capital. So in building Copio in the last 2 years since I've been there, is really trying to, you know, restructure the entire organization that has the right fundamentals, that has a path to profitability. And I think a lot of African businesses today don't necessarily have that. You need, like, you know, I came from private equity prior to joining Copio, and you know, from a private equity standpoint, we was only looking at businesses that were profitable, that was, you know, number one in their market, had pricing power. You know, we had actually realized many exits. We had done really good investments, and it was one of the best performing funds, just when you look at the returns. So I tried to take all of those sort of principles into the VC, or take into the startup world. And I'd say one of the things I've seen across like Copia and also many other startups in the ecosystem is that they don't have the fundamentals in place, and they're not building with the right fundamentals in place. So just to give you a simple example, you know, you want to build a business and you want to sort of hedge against your currency. So you'll find a lot of startups will offer dollarized salaries to a lot of their staff. Meanwhile, their earnings are in local currency. You can't pass on the, you know, the currency depreciation that you're experiencing onto your top line growth. So one of the important factors is you have to also match all your earnings to also your all your outgoings. There are certain areas where you can't do that, for example, software licenses and so on. But to a large extent, that's a fundamental issue you need to resolve as you start building the right foundations. A lot of companies are overhiring, you know, in our markets, which is overhiring for a plan which is 2 or 3 years way ahead of them. You need to hire for the team that you need right now, and you need to keep it lean and try and outsource as much as you can to outside vendors with very focused KPIs. So, you know, going back to your question on the challenges we're facing in this market, I think, you know, the reality is now setting in for everyone as they focus on profitability, and it's important. But anyone who's coming into this market looking to raise money, you know, you have to really focus very much on your unit economics, knowing how to, you know, stay or remain lean as possible. At the same time, make sure your product market fit is absolutely right for the market.
Okay, thanks very much. And then, so we've got some context now about the macroeconomic climate. Let's go back to the question then, you know, the front line, insights from the front line. Uzoma, what is the front line for you at the moment? Like, what are you kind of battling, or what are you growing? How, you know, who are you doing battle with day to day?
Everybody.
Everyone.
All my stakeholders. 360, I mean, like from, so I'm starting, and the battle is like, I get the battle, I'll call it battle, is the challenges. The battle one is the, my primary stakeholder is my customers, and that education, right? Why am I different from this other person, right? What is the value add to me? So you must remember I have limited capital and resources. So I'm trying to like manage those resources across my stakeholder group. So that's my those are my customers, but that is a battle that is going to continue growing. But I think it gets easier as they get older, because I'm hoping that Gen Z and millennial is the next 5 years, right, will be the bigger part of the economic generation. So that way, it will be an easier sell. And right now, I'm dealing with Gen X's like myself, and then you have the regulator. Now, I think the regulator from two sides is a real battle, because you do have to. I mean, as a business that is new and that is not, it's not your mainstay, you have to engage. You have to find a way to engage your regulator, because your traditional competition is in their face every single time, right? And then you have to educate them from the perspective of, you know, the only risk profile that you're seeing here is the technology risk. Everything else, we're doing the core. You're doing core banking. And the second bit too is actually the regulator, and I think it's transparency as well, because I don't think the regulators in Nigeria are transparent enough in terms of saying, all right, these are the bad guys in fintech, and these are the good bad guys in banking, and these are the good guys. So what they do is just blanket, you know, fintech can be dangerous. I mean, that already just sends the wrong signal. And suddenly, you know, I've written quite a few blogs saying, you know, I'm not a fintech, because I have to tell people that, you know, I'm a bank, I have a banking license, and, you know, I have fiduciary responsibility. And then, of course, there's also my competition as well, especially traditional banks who are also part of the problem as well. But I think the biggest challenge too is, because to provide the services, you need people. I think people, especially in Nigeria, are the biggest challenge from a skill perspective, and also from, it's just, I'm dealing, when I was in Diamond Bank, I think I was lower than the average age of people there. Now, you know, I'm 55 years old, and the average the average age is about 26 and 25, and a different breed of people. I mean, they are a different breed of people, right? I mean, the HR policy is completely different there. And so you have to, I mean, I'm so happy I have 21 and 22 year olds, because I actually understand and I get them. You know, like, they do something wrong, and you have to even find a way to reprimand them in such a way that you do not actually affect mental health. And so, you know, this is a new experience, a new life for me. So I mean, those are the challenges, yeah. And they're quite real, and I face them every single day.
Every day is a school day in terms of learning to deal with people. But you've mentioned talent there, so obviously, Chika, this is something that you know a lot about as well, having not just hired, I'm sure, hundreds of people over the years, but also now developing, you know, building and scaling a talent platform as well. What's your front line?
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing with, as a business, like, making sure that we have the fundamentals are good enough for us to survive. And by that I mean, you know, cash is coming in, and that we're able to bring down the expenses sufficiently. On the talent side, you know, we've had to see a lot of people who we recruited in, and for many people who were their first job. And for all my career, I've been like somebody who is very big on building talent and developing people. And, you know, so having to let a lot of people go over the last couple of years, you know, has been challenging. But we, you know, get a lot of joy out of seeing them go on to do really well in other industries. And really, in a way, we have trained people, both as a business and both as a service and for our business ourselves, train people for the ecosystem. I think the big challenge now for me is patience. So really managing myself around, because there's a reason why I hadn't run a business for 10 years and I came and started this business. So there's certain things I wanted to see happen. I wanted to see, you know, hundreds of thousands of young Nigerians being able to participate in the global tech opportunity. You know, and to play like a very hands-on role in catalyzing that, and we've done that to some extent, but we're so far behind. And Gen AI is throwing a lot of uncertainty into, you know, what role is there for lower, you know, the Africa sort of value proposition is high quality, low cost talent, right? But you know, to what degree is that value proposition going to remain valid to, you know, European and UK US businesses? So trying to figure that out and be patient, because I want stuff to happen now, right? And there's a limit to being able to do that. I think also, you know, therefore, returning to trying to really get really good at returning to the fundamentals, like understanding the fundamentals of what does it mean for me to be a good CEO, so to manage my leadership team, like fundamentally, like what does that mean to be really good at building and managing an executive leadership team? And what does it mean to be really good at growth marketing, like help the growth marketing company to be good at that? What does it mean to all the real pure fundamentals? You kind of, you know, it's something that you think that maybe you should have outgrown, but you can't outgrow it. If you're in the job as CEO and the founder of a company, you have to help. I have to help my company focus on fundamentals of building a good business. So that's the most important challenge for me.
Join us at Africa Tech Summit Nairobi in February, where African tech connects. Please visit africatechsummit.com/Nairobi for more details. Use discount code RAINEST, that's RAENEST, to receive a discount off delegate passes. To hear our latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel on your favorite app. You can also visit africatechsummit.com for our upcoming events and news.
And wanting things to be done now is symptomatic of every founder, CEO. Mike, I'm guessing you're the same. Yes?
Yeah.
How do you cope with that? How do you deal with it in terms of, you know, managing the front line, trying to build a business, but also kind of injecting this sense of urgency into your customers, your clients, your stakeholders, your team, everyone?
Yeah, great question, but let me zoom out for a second, and I also think in a negative cycle like we're in now, there's almost like a rebound to go back to, yes, like the fundamentals, the unit economics, the slow growth, get it right in one place before you expand. If you kind of zoom out, like here's the reality in Africa. There's now 1.5 billion people. This is a space we operate in supply chain. So there's over 100 million micro and small businesses that go from a trader, tabletop seller, to corner stores, to small pharmacies that are supplying goods and services. They're getting their stock from, you know, tens to maybe hundreds of thousands of like family-run wholesale businesses and distributors who are then connecting to networks of both global manufacturers and local manufacturers and regional businesses. There's technology, you've got internet connectivity, so big technological shifts, right? So internet connectivity, smartphone penetration are becoming ubiquitous, still some gaps in the market. And most of that still happens completely offline, and it's mostly still in cash, right? So this is a little bit of the hidden secret of like fintech and the startup world. Like anybody who even says like we've got a big number, they're talking about like hundreds of thousands of customers. When I'm saying there's like hundreds of millions, tens, hundreds of millions out there. And the population's average age of 19, and it's growing super quick. Birth rates are still high. So this is a big opportunity, but in some ways also a big challenge. And so when we started with Boost, we had that macro condition, or the macro vision to start. And say like we want to build like a global business across emerging markets, but we need to solve this first in Africa, and we launched in Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa during COVID remotely from day one to try to figure out can we build DNA in our business that can we actually build a competency on how to go to market and make that like our competency, and now we're in 6 markets and we have a total headcount of 20 people because we figured out. Some of the principles around this, around like, yeah, if you hire too quickly and your headcount's too high, like not only do you run out of cash faster, you need to raise more cash, but you can't manage all those people. If you get into logistics and your asset business, you get stuck, right? So figuring out how do we be the role of an enabler, focus on like really good technology, have like the you know people we hire, everybody needs to be like the best possible person. We've got to work as the best possible team. And you can then figure it out, like the scale really, really happens. And so that's really my front line. And we've got now the team that's like motivated, and I don't have to inject any urgency in anybody because everybody's like fully driving because they see like the opportunity is huge. And then you have like as we've talked about all the day-to-day constraints of like, you know, hey, the currency just halved and. Things are slowing down and the contracting took too long and we don't have enough runway and we have to like go without salaries for the next 3 months because cash is tight. Like you operate in these environments. But that's also what founders do is you like that's why we need entrepreneurs in the world because they solve problems and figure this out. And maybe I'll close and say like what I find is as a challenge personally is there's also like a big disconnect. When I'm pitching or having conversations with investors, a big disconnect of like what even the questions are that are being asked and due diligence and like nobody, as a technology company, nobody's ever asked to like meet my co-founder CTO or to actually like look at the technology or try the product. A lot of tech investors, there's a lot of tech investors in Africa. Nobody's looking at the tech to see if it's scalable. Elizabeth Rossiello mentioned earlier about culture. Like nobody's looking at like, what is your culture, your broader team? As an operator, these are the things that actually matter, right, in your business. Everybody wants to know what's your go-to-market and like, you know, what's your unit economics and like all that stuff's really important. But I just think you've got to balance that big picture vision and like the scale, because that's why we're doing this, is like to really make an impact at scale. But then the flip side, break it down into like what is happening today and this week and to actionable steps and like get really, really good at execution and have a good design that can kind of get you from path A to B.
That's helpful. Thank you very much, Mike. And then so you mentioned there about some of the challenges and some of the questions that should be being asked. So, you know, there's a lot of chat about, you know, VCs and due diligence and life cycle of deals, etc. But what are VCs asking? Question number one. And what should they be asking? I'm going to start with the Zomer actually on that one.
So I mean, like for my type of business, I think it's first of all understanding what I'm trying to do and to like understanding to what are you? What are you doing? What problem are you trying to solve? And what is the industry metrics there? Right? And so the industry metrics for, I mean, like when I look at, I mean, private equity. So when you look at banks, you look at what's your cost to income ratio. Actually, that's actually one of the biggest ratios that you want. And because what is it now and where do you want it to get to? Because that is what, you know, drives your sustainability. Or what's your return on equity? And that return on equity is what your profit is going to be. What is it now, which is zero, which is minus something. But where do you see it and how do you see that? And what's your strategy to grow it? And the biggest one too is like, okay, so what's your risk strategy? Because you are a bank, you are in financial services. And so how are you going to deal with all those risks that are going to be done? So because when you start looking at, okay, if you say, okay, so if you're going to use transaction metrics, right? So tell me what your customer strategy is going to be like. Because I think one of the biggest, what technology has done is, and what technology does in any industry, it facilitates, it scales things. And in some cases, it weaponizes things. So like fraud, right? So like the barrier to fraud has actually lowered, so everybody's in there. Now, if you're in a country like Nigeria where there are no jobs, there are no meaningful jobs, and it's easy for you to get a smartphone, and it's easy for you to get internet access, and it's easy for you to like go into like, you know, trying to see how you can pay, do some code and go into bank, that's the easiest thing to do. It's easier than farming. And so you find that most organizations, new businesses are focusing on, like, for example, fintech payment side, right? But no one's looking, how much have you invested in cybersecurity? How much have you invested in risk management? Those are the kind of questions that you want to ask people, because it means that if you've thought about that, you know, your country, your business is going to be, how much capital have you invested in the right places? How are you going to allocate the capital? It means that you're thinking about the business in 5 or 6 years' time, and you're thinking about those questions. The business is going to be here, the business is going to be profitable, and the business is going to be adding value to the community. Those are the fundamental things. Transaction volumes can go down in an economic cycle. How are you going to deal with it? If you don't have those answers to those questions, you have to be very worried about that business.
Okay, interesting. And Jermaine, you know, what are the questions that VCs are asking you, and what should they be asking going forward?
So a lot of the questions they're asking is around, one is the unit economics. I think they're very, you know, as a startup, when you put a plan together, and I've realized this over time, is you have so many different drivers leading towards that path to profitability. It makes it more difficult for VCs to understand and believe your case. So I think what's important that they're asking us is try and justify all of those different situations. I think what's important is, as you put together plans as founders, is focusing and narrowing it down to certain KPIs which you are very comfortable growing, and leaving all the other KPIs more or less, you know, flat, that you've proven out. So then at least it makes it easier to sell your case as you're driving the business forward. Many, I would say startups today are sort of putting in so many different KPIs which are driving growth and leading towards that path to profitability, and is making VCs very skeptical of their business models. So I think the questions, a lot of the questions they're asking is drilling into those details and trying to get very comfortable that they themselves believe what you're trying to do, because they're no experts in your industry. So the less where you could, you know, where you have, or the more things you can prove that are proven, makes it easier for them to be able to then justify. What they're not asking is, you know, they're not, a lot of them are very much focused on burn. And I don't think they sort of understand the fundamentals of what make up that burn. So I think, you know, as VCs going forward, you know, the questions that I think they should be reflecting on more is trying to get a better sense of your unit economics and how that translates into your burn, rather than just, you know, not asking the right questions around it. They also don't have a good grasp in terms of industry knowledge, and I think it's important that now, like, obviously there's many VCs that are sector agnostic, so it's important for them to go out into the market, speak to many industry experts, and I think they need to bring those industry experts into their discussions to help them frame that logic, because, like you said, they're not, when VCs meet with the CEOs, they're not asking to meet with the CTOs, they're not trying to understand the culture, they're not trying to understand all these things which make up an organization to help drive the right leadership or the right talent in order to get the results you want. So I think it's important that they need to start looking holistically at your business rather than just looking at a few financial KPIs that get you there.
Mm. And Chika, from your perspective, when you are, you know, you are at the front line, your business building and your operations and everything else, what's the most irritating question VCs? It's the end of the day. what irritates you the most? And it might be more than one thing. You might have a list.
Now it's very different from earlier on. Earlier on in my journey, when I started interacting with VCs, I had a lot, tremendous respect for VCs, because when somebody has money and you want the money, you know, so you just think that with money and wisdom are together.
Yeah.
So I've suffered a lot from that. But now I know that they are not, partly because me too, I've been trying to invest or be responsible for companies I don't, you know, they just don't know enough about the business. Mm-hmm. And so now I just, I'm very patient, because I know that day to day, they don't know what they are. I mean, generally speaking, right, they're also trying to figure it out. But I think, and I find it irritating when I get advice now, like advice around, like, oh, pay attention to your unit economics. Or now there's a lot of VCs telling you that unit economics matters and that profit matters.
Oh, wow, thanks for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you're being diplomatic. But actually, that's interesting, because you're saying that, you know, it's obvious to you that unit economic matters, but do you think that VCs are saying that because there is a crop of younger entrepreneurs, not being ageist, but there is a crop of entrepreneurs that maybe don't understand the importance of unit economics?
I'm telling you that the first companies that I received capital in, some of the investors, when they come for a meeting, you say, how fast can you spend this money?
Yeah, totally.
So we would have been thinking, okay, is that how fast you spend money? Is that like a KPI?
Yeah.
Or when you talk about profit, it's as if you're not ambitious. Like profit and ambition, and I can understand why. Mm. I understand where they're coming from, but there needed to be a lot more nuance around that, and a lot more thinking about sort of, I think there needed to have been some kind of frameworks for thinking about, you know how like mature businesses have balanced scorecard, because eventually they figured out that only looking at profit is not good, so they brought out, right? So I think that for early stage companies, they, you know, there has to be some kind of composition of those type of things, where when you're having a conversation, if the meeting is going to be about growth, let it be that there's a framework in which we're talking about growth, but it's not as if it's only growth that matters. So what I'm trying to say is that there are a lot of founders now. Majority of the founders now came into the industry where they were taught, indoctrinated the wrong things. And people sometimes are frustrated with the founders, but that's just how That's the music that was playing when they entered the party. And so, you know, I think fundamentally, if you look long term, that's why I said this is a very good time, a very important time, because people are, because that was always bad. It was always going to be bad, and we were never going to be able to build big, strong, sustainable companies. So this is gives the opportunity for us to learn, for people to learn how to build companies properly.
And Mike, have you developed a KPI for how quickly you can spend money?
No, but I totally, totally get that. So my KPI is how capital efficient we can be. Because I learned this my first time around. I had those KPIs from investors of like, you know, grow, hire ahead of the curve, expand. And I promise you, if you're pitching to an investor and you're talking about, they all want unit economics, they say that, but if you're talking about that in your pitch, they will not fund you, right? They want like the cocky stick graph to go big and how you're gonna go Pan-African, right? And until you get mature, once you're like really mature, like as a business, then like things might shift and you get into the private equity world. But in the venture world, like good luck, you just won't get the money. So as I personally have learned through many years of experience and failure and false starts to separate the fundraising process from the running the business process, right? Because it's a different, and there's an overlap. So you have to be very careful and make sure the narrative is true and authentic and comes with a lot of integrity. And you know, you never lie and make up numbers and all that stuff that some people still do. But then when the money is in the bank, you need to then say and get the founding team together to be like, okay, let's not assume that this money is going to last as long or the plan that we pitched on our deck is going to happen and the next round is going to be there at a higher valuation from bigger and better investors. Because that's like a very dangerous time in a company's life cycle, because you have all this money and you have all this pressure from the people who've now invested in you saying, okay, you've sold me this vision, like, let's go. And I want to see this, like, the numbers immediately jump from like where they are now to something bigger. So then what you do as a founder, you have this incentive to like spend the money on taking on the people and the costs and going into the new markets and launching the new products. But then your costs ramp and then your revenue doesn't. And if you're lucky, your revenue will catch up. But that's like the time where you need to step back and be like, okay, how do we, you know, we're stable now. How do we do some experiments? Make sure anything new we do, we get like the product market fit in the new market. Any hire we do, we have like a higher bar of who we hire because the stakes have risen, and using patience, I think, is a really good term for that. So
interesting. And so we're almost out of time, so we'll just kind of I guess final question, quite short if possible. What's harder, actually the front line as in doing business or dealing with VCs? We'll start with you, Mike, and then we'll go down the line.
Dealing with VCs.
Okay.
Like, because that's mostly my job.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say raising money, dealing with VCs. Right? I think that's because there are some people that they find that easier and don't want to operate. But, you know, people like us that like punishment, like operating. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Zoma, frontline or dealing with investors?
Oh, definitely investors.
Okay. Man. Jimmy?
I'll say frontline.
Okay.
Because you want your business plan to always go in the path that you want it to be. But if you can't achieve that business plan you sold to investors, you can't raise money from them. So if you can deal with the frontline challenges and get over that, you'll be in a good place to actually raise money.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions at all for this mega panel? Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. What about investors likely bring this frontline experience? Like former operators who then turn VCs,
because we don't see that many of those. And you know, from the experiences that you share, it seems like most of the VCs you've interacted with, you know, come from a financial perspective, right? They're focused on unique economics, profitability, those kind of things. And you also mentioned earlier that you also mentioned earlier that it was mentioned that some of the investors lack industry knowledge. So, you know, what about, you know, founders or operators turn investors, you know, within the continent? Do you see them? Do you like them?
Great question. Mike is itching to answer.
Yeah, love, those are my favorite investors. And we found even with small tickets, because not only can they understand, they're helpful, they get the context, awesome. And I've found like with building Boost is like good quality former operators, angel investors is great. And sometimes it's amazing how you can get very contradictory advice. So you can talk to an associate or like at a fund, and they'll be like, you know, come back to us when you like do these things. And then you talk to somebody who knows the sector, your industry, and they get the real business much quicker. And if you get money from them, then they're champions and they can really unlock doors. So it's a great point.
Thank you very much, Mike. Any other questions, anyone?
Yeah, I wanted to say something about that. Just that, like, if you look at it in Silicon Valley, the investing landscape changed as operators started getting into investing.
Yeah.
And I think that we sort of have that in Africa. That's
we're
coming.
Seeing it already, yes, in terms of that, you know, yeah. Andela Mafia,
yeah.
Fluxwave, yeah. And Paystack founders are, yeah, investing into, yeah, the
and
market.
And I think, again, I keep saying now is a good time, but. So I was early in that, right? Because I was operating in 2012, I started in 11, so I started investing. And what the problem then was that I was the guy who, after the investors come and they leave, because I was an earlier investor, I would say to the founder, don't mind them, all. This is what we're going to do. But over time, the founder started liking what the investors were saying,
right,
more.
Yeah.
When I say don't mind them, they'll say it's you that we're not going to mind.
Oh, wow.
But now, I think, you know, the investors and that's the financial investors and the operator investors are now saying more and more of the same thing.
Got it.
So I think there'll be less dissonance and confusion for founders.
I think we're almost up. I actually have a kind of follow-on question here for Uzoma. So Uzoma, your first round was kind of a friends and family round from people that you've worked with and a lot of operators as well. Like, how was that process for you in terms of having your first wave of investors who I guess knew you, knew the business, but knew how you operated as well?
I think with most of them were operators, run their own business, and knew exactly what we're doing. And it was easy for them to understand that, you know, this is patient capital and this is something different that you're doing. With everybody else, it was like, I want you to do what the other guys are doing. I want you to go into Africa, I want your African strategy. Yeah. And so like, no, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions at all, anyone? No, okay, well, thank you so much, my brilliant panel. Thank you very much for your questions, sir. Thank you.
Join us at Africa Tech Summit Nairobi in February, where African tech connects. Please visit africatechsummit.com/Nairobi for more details and use discount code RAINEST, that's RAENEST, to receive a discount off delegate passes.